Welcome to From the Press Box here at the AHL Report. It is Tuesday, January 23rd, 2018, and I am your host, the lead correspondent here at the AHL Report, Amy Johnson. And of course, I'm joined every week by my fabulous co-host, the editor-in-chief and founder of Rocket Sports Media, Mr. Rick Stevens.
Always thrilled to be here.
Thrilled?
Thrilled.
Absolutely thrilled. An adjective. Thrilled.
Yeah.
That's good. We hope you're all thrilled to be here as well. We've got a lot on tap for you today with another great episode as we wind down the month of January already. We're getting through the month of January, which is frightening. We are going to take a look, as we always do. We're going to kick things off with a little bit of a Rocket recap, take a look at what happened with the Laval Rocket in the last week, and go into some a little bit of in-depth analysis and commentary on how things are going there, and also preview the week ahead. We have some AHL news to cover, as well, of course, you know, Player of the Week. We've got some suspensions to discuss. And some other news items of note from around the league. And then, of course, with the NHL and AHL All-Star break coming up this weekend, our top five, which is always a very fun segment, our top five this week is going to center around the All-Star game. And so you won't want to miss that towards the end of the show. So as I promised, we're going to kick things off with a little review from the Laval Rocket. And Rick, I have to say, it was kind of like a tale of two cities last week. The Rocket played two games last week. They had almost an entire week off from playing games. They had quite a few days of practice, but it was almost a week in between the time they had played their last game. And so they played on Friday and Saturday night in a home and home against the Belleville Senators. And if anyone follows the Belleville Senators and the fantastic coverage that my colleague and our staff writer, Joseph Whalen, covers with the Belleville Senators. If you followed them with Joseph, you would know that the Belleville Senators have had their fair share of struggles this season, like the Laval Rocket have, and are in fact behind the standings from the Laval Rocket. So I'm not saying that Friday and Saturday's games should have been a drop in the bucket, but it certainly shouldn't have gone the way that it did on Friday night when they got absolutely shellacked and dominated at home in a game that saw Charlie Lindgren get chased out of the net after four goals on 10 shots. And then Saturday they turn around and they shut out Belleville at home 4-0. So it was like night and day. And Rick, it was sort of puzzling. Some stuff was things that we've seen go wrong before, but then they had this great bounce back game. I mean, it was just kind of all over the place.
Yeah, I think, as you said, tale of two cities. It was actually in two cities, as you said, with the home and home. The Belleville Senators are only 2 points back now, with both teams having played 43 games. Laval in fifth place, could drop to sixth. They've got some tough games coming up. And that fourth place playoff position, currently held by Utica, they're 7 points back now. And it's getting to
and
the
Utica
time
has a game
of the
in
season.
Hand.
That's true. But they're getting to the time of the year where those points are going to get tougher to make up. And at some point, Laval's going to have to stop with this one win, one loss thing and put a string together in order to move into playoff contention. It was great to see the bounce back, and I think that players themselves were kind of fed up with what's been happening, particularly in the loss, the blowout loss, and they were a different team playing in Belleville. But that's got to carry on. That's got to sustain itself, and the kinds of mistakes that are being made routinely game to game can't be made at this time of the season. And as I said, they've got they're missing some players, but they've got enough talent to be taking a run at this and be back in the playoffs for the second season in a row.
Well, and going along with that too, with that consistency that needs to come in is yet again this year, and I believe this was the case with the Ice Caps team last year, is that they actually tend to play better on the road than they do at home. And this month in particular, this month is not a good month for them to have that kind of, that kind of performance where they tend to play better on the road than they do at home, because most of their games this month are at home, and they've got three more games coming up this week against some very tough competition. So yes, they got dominated at home on Friday night and then went and shut them out on Saturday night on the road, but they need to be able to come home and play like that in Laval, as you say, and string some wins together and really get some momentum going and get some points up there on the board. You mentioned the word contention, and that's kind of almost sounds like the word contentious, which is a word I found myself thinking quite a bit watching these two games this past weekend. This surely, as kind of anyone could have predicted, is becoming a solid rivalry between these two teams being so close together, just a few hours down the road from one another. They see each other 12 times a year. And this is quickly becoming a very heated rivalry. Both games were very physical, very chippy. There was a lot of fights. There was a lot of guys getting under each other's skin. And Saturday night's game turned into an absolute, there were fights, there were cheap shots, there were game misconducts. I think there was 5 or 6 game misconducts handed out in Saturday's game. 5 of those were after the game was over for an enormous brouhaha that happened after the game, after the final horn had gone. And so while, yes, those things, make for some exciting hockey, they get fans into it, that kind of thing. But discipline needs to be the key. And the Rocket just really need to find a way to keep that consistency going. I do want to make note though, Rick, we've talked to Charlie Lindgren quite often in the last two seasons. And the one thing we always tell our listeners is one of our favorite quotes from him is that he told us, I do not like to be scored on. And you can see that every time he does get scored on and after every game in which the team has a loss. And he obviously wasn't happy after getting pulled on Friday night, but Sylvain Lefebvre said Friday night immediately after the game, no, I'm putting Charlie right back in net tomorrow night. He's gonna want to get that back, and then turns around and does what Charlie Lindgren does and earns a shutout. And I think that's a true testament to the competitive nature and how personally he takes his game.
Goaltending has not been the issue this season with the Laval Mm-mm. Rocket, and that sounds strange when you look at the stats and you see that the Rocket have given up 30 more goals than the Utica Comets, who they're chasing. They've scored roughly the same number of goals, but have given up 30 more. The Laval has given up more goals than the Binghamton Devils, who are in the basement, winning 12 games on the season. The Laval Rocket have given up 64 goals more than the Toronto Marlies, 64 goals in 40 games. It's they're giving up too many goals, and they're not playing sound hockey in their own end. That's both defense and forwards. They seem a little content to try to outscore their opponents. And so Eric Jelena remains, and with his goal scoring prowess, I guess, remains on the first pairing, but he's been a disaster in his own end. And not to blame it on any one person or any one player, but they must, for the remaining games of the season, they must play better in their own end. And take advantage of the good goaltending that they've been getting, primarily from Lindgren, but also when Michael McNiven and even when Zach Fucale came in.
Well, and that's just it. You know, we talk about goaltending not being the issue this season. There's been the constant, you know, three goalie rotations. Sometimes Fucali's been sent down. Sometimes he comes past weekend in particular. Fucali had found himself back down with Brampton again as they had a 3-3 on the road. So he got some playing time under his belt, and then yesterday was recalled to Laval again. So there's three goaltenders yet again in Laval. They have three games this week. I doubt we'll see all three goaltenders. But it'll be interesting to see if Fucali gets rotated in as backup or not. The other interesting, you know, and as you said, they're missing some guys. Sure, there's a lot of guys who are up with Montreal, who've been up with Montreal for a while. So as you mentioned, that shouldn't be an issue at this point of the season. They should be, the team should be accustomed to playing with the guys that they have on the roster. However, Chris Terry is still out with a lower body injury. Now, there is speculation that he could come back for tomorrow night's game, or at the very least for this weekend's games. He has not yet been, you know, there's other players on other teams who have been injured in the last 2 weeks who have officially been ruled out for the All-Star game and replaced with healthy players. That is not the case with Chris Terry. They haven't taken away his All-Star nomination. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, hopefully Chris Terry will be back in the lineup this week, which, of course, you've got some plenty of offensive prowess right there with being both the team's top scorer as well as one of the top scorers in the league. But on top of that, Nikita Sherbak didn't play on Saturday. He reportedly traveled to Belleville on Saturday, and then at the last minute was a scratch. And apparently, according to the broadcasters from 91.9 Sports, after they spoke to Sylvain Lefebvre after the game, apparently Nikita had blocked a shot with his foot on Friday night in Laval. And I'm guessing it was just maybe a little sore bothering him on Saturday, but they said it was completely minor and he should be back in the lineup this week. So, but that meant suddenly on Saturday night, Adam Cracknell is the only guy on the first line who typically plays on the first line. I think they had McCarron up there for a little bit to cover with Sherbak out. Dan Audet was still up there for Chris Terry, but you know, doesn't help when that first line that's creating all the offense is suddenly down two of its three players.
Yeah. And I think special teams in particular have relied heavily on Chris Terry. The power plays relied heavily on Chris Terry. It was a problem. I personally felt it was a problem when he was healthy. He's absolutely deadly from the faceoff circle, the one timer. But teams were beginning to sniff that out and pay more attention to him. And now, given that the power play was a kind of a one trick pony with him out of there, it's been difficult for them as well. So, I think they have to, spend some time making sure that there's other threats coming from their power play.
Absolutely. So we've mentioned that they don't have an easy week coming up this week at home, heading into the All-Star break. They play Syracuse on tomorrow night, on Wednesday night, and Syracuse is in that third place position in the division. They are going to be without some of their big scorers. I believe Bornival was called up, and I believe Pekka was called up as well. So, and I believe they also have, they have a player who will be suspended tomorrow night as well. So they are going to be without some of their firepower, which, quite frankly, Laval needs to take advantage of that if they can. So they've got Syracuse tomorrow night, and then yay, Manitoba comes into town for a back-to-back Friday and Saturday. And we all know how horribly bad the Manitoba Moose just suck at playing hockey. for those who don't follow the standings, Manitoba is first. I believe they're still first in the conference. I know in their division they are.
The Marlies have moved ahead of them.
Okay.
The Marlies have been on 1-8 of
on
their
a
last
streak.
The Moose, like 3 of their last 10, they've been on a bit of a downward swing. So I think the Marlies moved ahead of them.
Okay. Well, regardless, the Manitoba Moose are a force to be reckoned with. And when Laval went out to Manitoba, they were a couple of difficult games. So they need to really be locked in this week, because they've got 3 games that are full of very, very precious points. They need as many of these 6 points this week as they can possibly get before they head into the All-Star break. Taking a look at some AHL news, we'll start with the player of the week. The CCM AHL player of the week was announced yesterday, and it is Providence Bruins goaltender Zane McIntyre. He had 2 starts last week and had 2 shutouts last week, stopping 55 total shots for 2 consecutive shutouts over Atlantic Division opponents, one of which was the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins, who were on an absolute tear themselves. So that's pretty impressive to get a shutout against the Pens. And it looks like he also had a shutout against Springfield as well. So that was on Friday and Sunday. So congratulations to Zane McIntyre of the Providence Bruins on being named the CCM AHL Player of the Week. Suspensions. We mentioned suspensions. There are 2 of note for this week. The first, as I mentioned, Syracuse was going to be down a player due to suspension tomorrow night, and that is forward Alex Gallant was suspended for 2 games. So tomorrow's game is the first game of his 2-game suspension. He will also be suspended for Friday's game against Belleville, but the first was an automatic suspension for being assessed an instigator penalty within the final 5 minutes of the 3rd period. And then also got an automatic 1-game suspension because this was his 3rd game misconduct in the general category this season. So 2 games for Mr. Gallant. Unfortunately, Laval Rocket forward Jeremy Gregoire also was assessed an automatic 1-game suspension for also being given an instigator penalty. He was part of the big scrum that happened Saturday night after the final horn. And so as such, he actually was given 2 game misconducts that night. One was for fighting outside of the periods of the hockey game. And so then the other one was an instigator penalty, which comes with an automatic suspension for 1 game. So he will miss tomorrow night's game against Syracuse, which I'm sure that second line of Vea and McCarron will miss having Gregoire there, especially since he just came back from injury. And he's been pretty feisty in both of his games since coming back. So he'll miss out on this one. I reckon that Kyle Vaughn will draw into his spot on the second line as he has in the past. There was an outdoor game that happened, Rick, this past weekend.
Another one.
This one, it's the 10th AHL outdoor game in league history. The first one was back in 2010. And this one was, as we mentioned last week, it was held at Hershey Park Stadium. It's not the first time that Hershey Park Stadium has played host to an AHL outdoor game. It was between bitter rivals, the Lehigh Valley Phantoms and the Hershey Bears. And Rick, for all intents and purposes, and from everything that I've seen, it was a really big success. The weather was beautiful. It was, you know, it was mild. There wasn't precipitation. They had great attendance. There were over 13,000 fans in attendance, which for an AHL outdoor game, that's a pretty tremendous draw.
Yeah, I agree. From all I've seen, it was a big success, as was the alumni game
mm-hmm.
featuring the Legion of Doom. I would have liked to see not that
absolutely
I had any fondness for the Flyers or but. The Legion of Doom was special, and I can appreciate that. And they were in part of the alumni game.
Yes, absolutely. Well, and it was kind of a really packed weekend for the Flyers and their affiliates, because the Lindros jersey retirement ceremony happened in Philadelphia on Thursday night. And then Lindros played, of course, in the alumni game outside of Hershey Park on Friday night. I believe he was on hand on Saturday with the Phantoms for the actual outdoor game on Saturday night. And then I believe he was in attendance again for the Flyers game on Sunday when they defeated the New Jersey Devils. So it was kind of a Lindros filled weekend. But yeah, everything we have seen looks like it was a tremendous success. And as these games continue to be so successful around the league, we should certainly continue to see these kinds of events happen. And I highly recommend if one ever happens near where you live, get to, even if they're not teams that you follow, get tickets and go, because it's, you know, it's not the 45,000 fans you're going to get for an NHL outdoor game, but it's a good kind of warm up to what that experience is like, getting to see a game played outside. It's just, it's very unique, and it's a ton of fun. I have some two stories this week, as far as the AHL and just hockey here in the States is concerned. Some sad news to pass along. It's been a rough bit of a rough week. First of all, for the AHL, former AHLer Andrew Carroll passed away at the age of 32, allegedly from a fall. Don't have any more information than that, but he passed away just earlier this week, I believe. He played 148 games in the American Hockey League during his 6 years pro. He played for the Hartford Wolfpack, the Connecticut Whale, the Abbotsford Heat, Peoria Rivermen, and the Hershey Bears. And he played for the Charlotte Checkers and Bakersfield Condors when they were in the ECHL. And so very sad to hear at such a young age, a former AHL player, Andrew Carroll, has passed away at the age of 32. In other sad news, Rick, which this just absolutely floored me when the news alert came across my phone, was a statement from USA Hockey, which announced that Jim Johansson, who is the executive director of USA Hockey and the GM of the 2018 U.S. Olympic men's hockey team, passed away in his sleep early Sunday morning at his home in Colorado Springs. And I believe he was only 52. I might have, he was in his early 50s. I know that.
53. 52 or 53. Yeah. Yep.
Absolutely. Absolutely shocking. I mean, he literally just in the last few weeks was the one making the phone calls to all the guys who've made the U.S. Olympic men's hockey team roster to tell them, hey, you're on the team. He's at every USA Hockey event that we've ever attended. He is so involved in the sport of hockey in the United States and has so much responsibility for raising the profile of hockey in the United States, and just hockey players, coaches, scouts, you name it, just the hockey world. It was really rocked by this news that he passed away suddenly in his sleep.
Yeah, it's really shocking. And as you said, we've run into him many times in Lake Placid or more recently in Plymouth, Buffalo, at either the USA Hockey events, the All-American Prospects game, and then we were there for the Olympic announcement when he was named GM of the team. And he spoke about his philosophy, which I found quite different, not only because of the situation with the NHL players going, but just the type of team that he was looking for, where in the past we've heard a lot of focus on Canada and how they wanted to be physical. He spoke about a skilled team, a fast team, and certainly that's going to be part of his legacy is the Olympic tournament coming up. It puts a little bit of extra burden on Tony Granato and Chris Chelios and the rest of the U.S. team. But not only that, his legacy with the the U.S. development program.
Absolutely.
And just not only within the U.S., but respected internationally as well.
Mm-hmm.
In Plymouth, we saw his daughter toddling around the young daughter toddling around.
Oh, yeah. I tweeted about that.
the top of the stands.
The concourse, yeah. Decked out in USA Hockey gear. And
well, one time she had her USA Hockey jersey. The other time she had her Sweden jersey on that had been presented to Jim by Team Sweden. It's just a really sad story. And one of those people that, you know, may not be a household name to hockey fans, but was just behind the scenes. He was so big in U.S. hockey. And I think the comment that I found most fitting was somebody said that Jim made everyone he met feel important, no matter their role. And mm-hmm. I have to say, we felt the same thing that he was quite gracious, quite open to talk, quite interested in what you had to say, and just a real genuine, sincere lover of the hockey game, the game of hockey, and it's sad to see him go.
Absolutely, and our thoughts and condolences and things go out to his wife and his very young daughter and his family. It's amazing if you do a search on Twitter for Jim Johansson, not only the outpouring from colleagues and coworkers and coaches and scouts and just businessmen and women in the hockey industry, but more importantly, the American hockey players who have come through USA Hockey under Jim Johansson's tutelage and guidance and whatnot, the comments from them and how profoundly this is affecting them and what an impact he made on their lives as they came up through their youth in USA Hockey, whether it was through the National Team Development Program or just, you know, skating through the national team for World Juniors and things like that. It's tremendous, the outpouring of emotion of how hard this is hitting many of the young players who are in the NHL or in the AHL and junior hockey right now. So if you're not familiar, as Rick said, you may not be familiar with who Jim Johansson is, but do a search on Twitter for him and just read through some of the comments from players to see how big, as Bill Daly, the deputy commissioner at the NHL, said, the hockey world lost a giant. And I think that's a pretty fitting adjective for his impact on the sport in the United States. So our condolences as we lost Jim Johansson this week as well. Before we move on to our top five segment, Rick, I guess there's at least one roster update we wanted to speak about.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say, I understand that a familiar name to Brampton Beast fans from last year, Luke Pither, has an update on what he's doing these days.
Yeah, Luke Pither, he played last season. He played 37 games for the Beast. Also got into a game with the Utica Comets. The year before, he was called up and played for the St. John's Ice Caps. This season, he was off to Europe, and he played in the Swedish league number two, the second best league in Sweden. Almtuna, probably not saying that right, terminated his contract last week, and there was some question whether he, with Brampton struggling this year, whether they would have an interest in him. But he He went to the UK and he signed with the Nottingham Panthers, and will continue the rest of his season there. Also, with respect to the beast, Willie Coren. Willie Coren, who has played 25 games with the Beast this season, for the month of December, he was with the Lavelle Rocket. Didn't get into any games, but was practicing with the team. He has signed a PTO with Belleville, and so he
which won't
will
that be...
be
interesting the next time those two teams play against each other, since he practices with Lavelle for so long.
That's right. But he's, he's, and given the affiliation in Brampton is split between, Belleville and Lavelle, they had an opportunity to see Willie, like what they saw, Belleville that is, and signed him to a PTO. The other one, and this goes back a bit, I'm frankifying his name. Stephen McCauley. He played with the Hamilton Bulldogs back in the 2013-14 season. He just got a call up to the Syracuse Crunch,
nice.
As if they weren't already strong enough. He's been with the Everblades and got a call up. But many. Hamilton Bulldogs fans will recognize his name from that 2013-14 season. He was with Christian Thomas, who's off to the Olympics, and Louis LeBlanc and Gabriel Dumont and Connor Crisp and others on that 2013-14 season. When I looked at the roster, that team was interesting, and the number of players that are Nathan Beaulieu was there, the number of players that are now playing in the NHL, and it's interesting when sometimes Canadians fans say about not developing players, the number of players that are now playing in the NHL. But not playing for the Montreal Canadiens is interesting. And the fact that three goaltenders, Dustin Tokarski, Devin Dubnyk, and Mike Condon from that roster are currently in the NHL is Tokarski with Phantoms, but has some NHL experience this year.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Dubnyk, and Condon with Minnesota and Ottawa respectively. So, just a point of interest while we talk about the signings, the updates, roster updates this week.
Excellent. Always glad to see names that we are familiar with as they pop up around the league, and hopefully all three of those players do very well. And we'll see if we see McCauley in the lineup against Laval tomorrow night. Could be interesting.
And good luck to Willie Coren, because, you know, he's a good old Minnesota Vikings fan. And so I can commiserate with him this week.
Let the record show that I, the lifelong Philadelphia Eagles fan, opened this show and got, I don't know how long, 25 minutes, 28 minutes into this show, and not once did I do what most people blame Philly fans of doing, which is being rude and obnoxious. Not once did I mention the absolute walloping that Philadelphia laid down on Minnesota on Sunday. I didn't want to rub salt in the wound that the Vikings stayed home that day and sent their grandmothers to play or anything like that. But yet you have to come in with the little jab about Willie Coren being a good old Minnesota Vikings fan.
Yeah,
by the way,
Charlie
go
Lindgren.
Eagles. And, I'm so sorry, no,
you know
Charlie
what, you know what happened? You know what happened? I'll tell you what happened.
Case Keenum sucks.
There's, well, that's true, but there's Minnesota cruising along, just cruising along.
And for one drive.
Everything's fine. What changed? What changed on Sunday? The one thing that changed was that Belleville Senators writer Joey Whalen declared his allegiance that day. Joseph Whalen declared his allegiance.
Did you call him Joey Whalen?
That day to the Minnesota Vikings. And as soon as he did that, it was downhill after that. So
run. Hey, he got an all caps for, he said to me that he is now rooting for the Eagles in the Super Bowl. And I replied to him in all caps and I said, damn right you are. Okay, so I'm going to take a moment and digress here since you brought this topic of conversation upon yourself.
Okay.
This is your own fault. I was not going to rub salt in the wound. But okay, so I wanted a competitive game on Sunday. I really did. So I truly am sorry that your Vikings decided to stay home and decided to not play football on Sunday because they looked god-awful. And coupled with the fact that apparently, I don't know, somebody came up with some sort of cocktail to make Nick Foles play like he hasn't played in like 5 years. And I don't even know. So needless to say, I'm exceptionally excited. Go Eagles, go Philadelphia. Not one single arrest in the city of Philadelphia on Sunday night. Not one
because
single
the police
arrest.
Stayed home too.
The police did not stay home. In fact, they greased all of the lampposts down Broad Street with Crisco to try to prevent fans from climbing them. And they said, hold my beer, and proceeded to climb every Crisco-laced, greased-up lamppost. Not one single criminal arrest. And, hey, we're going to the Super Bowl. And if everyone in this country, except for, you know, maybe five people, really don't want Tom Brady to win another freaking Lombardi trophy, then I fully accept all of your bandwagon fandom to help us beat the Patriots, because they're going to have to play like they did on Sunday to beat the Patriots. If they do, they have a shot. I legitimately think they have a shot if they can come to play like they did on Sunday. If they don't, if Nicky Foles can't do what he did on Sunday, and if, Doug Peterson's play calling isn't as brilliant with the surprise flea flicker and everything, then it's not going to be so good. But I, for one, don't want to see the New England Patriots win another Lombardi. So it's going to be interesting. But I am sorry that that the Vikings played as poorly as they did.
Yeah, it's funny because they didn't play poorly in the first half.
No.
They moved the ball very effectively and they ran on the Eagles, which hasn't been done all season.
And then they turned it over four or five.
Well, yeah,
times.
It was Case Keenum. Okay, he's been decent all year, but he's a third string quarterback. And we saw exactly why. The pick six and then the strip that led to the fumble. That was the turning point.
That was even more beautiful.
You know, the Vikings have had problems on the offensive line and some injuries, and offensive line wasn't giving him protection. Then they had a couple of key injuries on defense and Sendejo and Rhodes, and it just all fell apart. And the fact that they banned 99-year-old Millie from the building, and the fact that they resodded the center of the field, those kinds of things.
The resodding had not one damn thing to do with it. Didn't have one thing to do with it. Not one. Didn't have. And you want to talk about injuries? We're missing our MVP quarterback. Not to mention Darren Sproles and Jordan Hicks and like five other guys from the beginning of the season. So I don't want to hear about your injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
I think we should move on.
Probably. Before I break out into singing the Fly Eagles Fly fight song, which God knows our listeners do not want to hear.
No.
Okay, moving along. So, hey, Super Bowl, 2 weeks. I expect all of our listeners
And Joseph, we love you. I'm just kidding.
Joseph, I am not responsible for anything that your editor-in-chief has said today. So he went off agenda. It's not my fault. All right, moving on to our top five. Hey, we have an all-star game coming up this weekend. Yes, the NHL all-star game is coming. Whoop-de-doo. Goody-two-shoes. Great. Can't wait. But the AHL All-Star Classic is also coming up this weekend. And Rick and I will be in Utica, New York yet again this year to cover all of the festivities. So make sure that you are following us on Twitter, all of our accounts on Twitter, all of our accounts on Instagram, because we're going to be live tweeting. We're going to be doing interviews with players, shooting photography. I'm going to try to get out on the ice with Chris Terry and Matt Tarmina again, like I did last year, and do some in the moment live hits for social media, see how they're enjoying themselves and experiencing the whole thing. It's going to be a lot of fun. So make sure you stay tuned with that. The skills competition takes place on Sunday night, and then the All-Star Classic, I believe they're doing it tournament style again this year. That will take place on Monday night. They are being broadcast on television in the U.S. I believe it's going to be on the NHL Network. And in Canada, it will be simulcast on Sportsnet, I believe. So you can watch along with us. Because who wants it? I mean, Monday night is the game. So everybody should be able to watch that. Sunday night, I know there's conflict with the NHL All-Star game, but nobody wants to watch that. Like, watch the skills competition on Saturday and then watch the AHL skills competition on Sunday. It's going to be very fun. So in honor of those festivities, our top five today centers around the AHL All-Star Game skills competition events. Typically, there are seven events that take place at the AHL skills competition. We are going to list our top five favorite events of those seven. Those seven events, for those of you who perhaps aren't familiar with the AHL skills competition, there is a puck control relay, there's a fastest skater, a rapid fire, hardest shot, accuracy shooting, pass and score, and a breakaway relay. So a little some slight differences from the NHL skills competition, and as we go through our top five, I'll explain some of those categories in a little more detail as either one of us name them, so that you can understand what those events actually entail, the ones that aren't so obvious. I'm going to assume that you have disclaimers and honorable mentions and rules and regulations and stipulations and addendums and amendments and...
Well, I'll surprise you and say no, because, I mean, there were seven events. You got to pick five of them. So didn't seem to make sense to me to have honorable mentions or whatever. So I played it straight this week.
I know what's wrong. Because that's just not like you. It's okay. You're still recovering.
I'm in a funk because of the Minnesota Vikings.
You're still recovering
from your
Minnesota Vikings loss, aren't you?
Exactly. Okay. Depressed.
Hold on, let me get you a tissue.
Bring it home. It was supposed to be the first NFL team.
Oh, well.
Host to be, you know, oh. Never mind.
Oh, well, you know, Philadelphia is happy to bring it home for you to watch it.
Yeah, and the most boorish fans in that's the thing that all of the
Minnesota
Vikings fans who are volunteers at for the Super Bowl are going to have to be nice.
God
to
bless them,
Philly fans. Yeah, really.
It's good. Oh, Minnesota's not going to know what hit it when Philly fans
show up.
They were throwing
full beer cans at the Vikings fans. Full beer cans
at
anyway,
the bus.
Go ahead. No, as the Minnesota Vikings in their regalia were walking in, they were getting pelted with beer cans.
Well, you shouldn't walk within throwing distance.
Well, fortunately, seeing the arms on some of those guys, and they had been tailgating for a while.
Say, they've been drinking for 9 hours straight. So, I mean, come on. pre-gaming is a professional sport in Philadelphia, for those of you who don't know.
And Buffalo, right, as we saw. As we saw.
Well, yes, in Buffalo, they pre-game. I was ready to hop out of the car and be like, hey, I'll be in the stadium in about a couple hours. I'm going to go see what's happening over here in the parking lot. All right, the top five All-Star Game skills competition events. Let's start with your number five. So you had to leave two off the list.
I did. And the number five is the breakaway relay.
Just stop it.
Because people like seeing breakaways. It's just, you like seeing it. And I guess last year, Charlie Lindgren was there, as was Chris Terry. But as I think back to it, it was Johnny Brzezinski that from the Ontario Reign.
That's
and
right.
Charlie, who were very good friends.
Right.
That all of a sudden it became a little bit extra competitive when it was one-on-one between those two. And that was fun to see.
Absolutely. Well, I said stop it because the breakaway relay is also my number five. For those who aren't familiar, so the six pucks are positioned 10 feet outside the blue line. Six shooters positioned in a line at center ice. Ref blows the whistle. First player picks up the puck, skates in on goal, attempts to score, has to then circle around and skate back outside the blue line. As soon as he clears the zone, then the second of the six players go. And so they have 50 seconds for all six players to complete getting a shot on goal and getting back outside the blue line again. So it moves quickly. It is fun to watch. It's the closest thing to, you know, the NHL All-Star Game is, you get the one-on-one, the crazy shots on goal, the shootout competition kind of thing. It's the closest that the AHL skills competition gets to that. It's the only time that a shooter's really one-on-one with a goaltender in that kind of fashion. So it's pretty entertaining to watch. And it's four groups of six shooters and four goaltenders per team. So it's a lot. And
Zane McIntyre, who we just mentioned, was one of the goaltenders in that grouping for representing Providence. He was there. Lindgren, of course, Tristan Jarry from Wilkes-Barre. But when you look back in the previous winners, are those guys the goaltenders who really were standouts? You see names like Connor Hellebuyck, who's been fabulous for the Jets this year. Peter Mrazek from Detroit. For those fans, you're going to be seeing the stars of the NHL stars of the future when you watch the AHL All-Star Game.
That's true. All right. So what's your number four pick? If it's the same as mine again, I'm calling cheating.
Rapid fire.
Okay.
We're okay. Again, I proceed.
You may proceed.
It's two shooters near the top of the circle on opposite sides. They each have five pucks with a goaltender, and as it sounds, they just rapid fire. Charlie Lindgren was in that last year and made five saves of the 10 shots. I think it's not fun for goaltenders. Well, maybe it's fun for goaltenders, but it's not where they are making their stats.
No,
it's just fun to see. And 2 years ago, it was Michael McCarron doing it, and we know he had a lot of fun in the rapid fire. Yeah,
he did.
Because he asked us for the video that we took of it.
That's right. And the shots are coming from opposite sides. They're coming fast because two shooters are shooting at the same time. They're just alternating shots from two different angles on the goaltender. But the key is that they can't just shoot whenever they want. The ref whistles them for every shot. They can't shoot before that whistle goes off, but he does it in a very rapid fire manner. So it's they have to have really fast reaction time, and the goaltender is constantly switching what angle they're taking shots from. So yeah, that is a fun event to watch.
And another Winnipeg goaltender, Eric Comrie, was 2 years ago, I think, was the goaltender who won that particular competition.
I think so, yeah. My number four is the puck control relay. And this is where basically puck handling through a ridiculous obstacle course down the ice and back. And it's just, for someone who doesn't play the game, I'm amazed at just watching the hands on these guys, because you're racing, you're not only trying to get through the course, but you're also racing against a guy from the other team who's doing the course at the same time. And then after all three players from each team have gone through their races, whoever had the best time from each team then goes head to head. And so it's pretty exciting to watch, and especially just how fast these guys can cut on their skates while maintaining puck possession and the hands to go backhand, forehand, and around in circles. And it's pretty fun to watch. So I have the puck control relay at number four.
Yeah, making the skill that really helps them in the NHL, making plays at speed, and mm-hmm. that's the skill competition that relates to that most, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
I have accuracy shooting at number three.
Okay, I'm calling cheating.
Okay, well, there wasn't that many so it's not surprising that there's some similarities.
Excuses.
Accuracy shooting, and just if we can talk about the NHL for a minute, the accuracy shooting has been the same for many, many years, and it's those, you know, what looks like styrofoam targets that they put in each corner, and the players have to in whatever sequence they want break the targets. And, you know, obviously they're trying to get 4-4. But in the NHL this season, they're adding a bit of technology to it, and they're going to have LED targets in the corner, and they're going to light up randomly. So it isn't the shooter choosing which targets in what order. That's chosen for them, and they have to hit the targets. Not sure we're going to see that at the AHL level, but accuracy shooting is still a lot of fun. Matt Terramina was pretty good in it last year. Of course, he was with Syracuse then, and he'll be back at the All-Star game this year. So I'm pretty sure that's going to be an event we'll see Matt in this year.
Well, I actually also have accuracy shooting at number three, just because, again, I don't play hockey, and just the ability, I am amazed, especially at the speed at which these guys get these shots off, trying to get everything done as quickly as they can. I am just amazed at the ability to be able to do that, especially the guys that just get those 4-for-4, just four shots, four targets, and they're done. I don't remember if someone did that last year or not. But I do know that there are at least three guys who hold the records for having perfect 4-for-4 showings. Andy Hilbert in 2005, Gabe Gauthier in 2008, and Mike Santarelli in 2009. And I'm always blown away when that happens, or even if they get close to that. It's just a really exciting, really exciting event to watch. And as you say, with it'll be interesting to see it in the NHL this year with the electronic targets and how that technology is going to work. I imagine they'll still have the destructible foam targets at the AHL game, but should be interesting to watch.
So I should let you go first for number two, because You'll say, otherwise you'll say it called cheating or something.
Yeah. Well, for number two, I picked the fastest skater.
Uh-huh.
Is that what you picked?
I have fastest skater as number two.
Okay. Means we have the same number one, I guarantee it. Fastest skater needs no explanation. It's just that it's whoever can skate one revolution around the rink the fastest behind the nets. We have talked about the fact that Amy is not a proficient skater, and so I think the record is somewhere around the 13-second mark in the AHL, which to me, I'm just 13 seconds. Yeah, right. At just the speed at which these guys skate, it's just incredible. And I really enjoy part of the fun of the skills competition is not only watching the events, but especially when you're there at the event in the building, is watching all of the other guys watching the event who are not participating in the event, because they all really get into it and they chirp each other, and they, you know, guys who have been friends or former teammates and whatnot, they all kind of congregate together on the ice by the benches, and they all seem to really enjoy the fastest skater competition as well. They get really into it and loud and cheering guys on and stuff like that. So I have the fastest skater at number two.
I do too. Enjoyed a lot. Jack Roslovic, I think he came in second, but we just saw Jack Roslovic a lot last year. He was very proficient in many of these events. Mm-hmm. And he was 13.6 was his time last year. And of course, this year would probably be at the top of the AHL scoring, but has spent a good deal of time up with the Jets. And the other, with respect to the fastest skater, I always smile when I look down and see the 10 fastest time all time in the AHL. And
okay.
to see that Lars Eller is...
Larsy.
Yeah, number five all time in this event. And good for Lars.
Yeah, because that skill isn't something that the Montreal Canadiens need at all. I'm sorry, did I just say that out loud?
Mm-hmm.
So that leaves number one. I'm going to assume that you did not choose pass and score as your number one event.
And you didn't use it. Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's the only one that is left that hasn't been mentioned. But no, I didn't.
Correct. Yes, I left rapid fire off of my list. You probably left the puck control relay off of your list. I left pass and score off because honestly, I think it is a hot mess. Pass and score, for those who aren't familiar. Okay. Just visualize this for a second. Three pucks are placed across the center red line. At the starter's whistle, a heat of three players leaves the red line with one puck and attempts to score on the opposing goalie. However, all three players must touch the puck at least once, meaning there's a minimum of two total passes before the puck is shot at the net. All three players must then clear the zone and remain onside before skating back in with their next puck. Those three players have 30 seconds to attempt to score three goals. Slap shots and rebounds are not allowed. I'm sorry, but it is a hot mess. You put together three guys who don't play on a team together. So passing, it's not just, you know, there's no look passes. It's and to try to do it in 30 seconds, and it's entertaining, but it's just not my favorite. So that means we both chose the hardest shot as our favorite category.
For sure.
And that, I think I would imagine that even at the NHL level, that's probably one of the favorite events for just about anybody to watch. Because who doesn't want to watch somebody just wind up and slap a puck towards the goal as hard as they possibly can?
Absolutely. And it's, you know, at that level, at the NHL level, you know, it's Zdeno Chara, it's Shea Weber, all in the 108 mile an hour range. when we look at the AHL, it's almost there. I always the number that sticks in my mind is Magnus Nygren, the Canadiens prospect, back in 2014 was at 104.6. It didn't get up in that range last year. I think the winner was 99 something, Kyle Wood, from Tucson, but it's just the power and you know, the way they connect. It's kind of the premier event at the skills competition.
It's really something to watch. And I remember, did Morgan Ellis participate in this 2 years ago? He did. And he came close. I think he came in, what, second or third? 101 or 102. And I think he even surprised himself. He was quite pleased with his performance. And it was pretty fun to watch him do that. It's just like, as I say, I mean, there's nothing more fun than just watching guys just be able to crank it up as much as they possibly can and fire a puck with all of their might. And the amount of torque that they get on their sticks to do it is just crazy to watch. That's definitely my favorite as well. We would love to hear what your favorite events, either at the NHL or AHL All-Star Game is. Be sure to hit us up on Twitter at the AHL Report and tell us what your top five is. And just in general, what it is that you like about the skills competition and All-Star Game weekend, or what you don't. There's a lot of people who are not fans of the All-Star festivities. It works for some people, doesn't work for others. It's the skills competition to me is more fun to watch than the actual game. Just because of how safe the game is usually played. It should be a very fun weekend. Again, don't forget, we will be covering the AHL All-Star Classic all weekend long, Sunday and Monday. You can find us at the AHL Report on Twitter. You can find Rick on Twitter at AllHabs, and you can find me on Twitter at Flyers Rule. And it'll be at my Flyers Rule account where I'll be sure to try to do some live hits and some periscopes throughout, especially if I can grab either Chris Terry or Matt Taormina in the midst of festivities and whatnot. So you won't want to miss out on those as well. And of course, be sure to follow along with us on Instagram as well, either at AllHabs or at AHL Report on Instagram, where we'll have some exclusive photography from the event and so forth. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm very much looking forward to it, Rick. I think it'll be fun to see how a great hockey town and hockey building in Utica shows up and turns out for an All-Star game.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll do a great job, and I'm looking forward to it too. And it's a time when you get to see players from different teams interact and catch up with each other who haven't seen each other in a while, and it's really a great hockey event, and we'll be able to bring it to you.
Well, and especially for those, you know, we're as we talked about last week, you know, the Eastern Conference doesn't see the Western Conference until the Calder Cup final. This is the one opportunity during the year that players that are on opposite conferences actually get to see one another outside of the playoffs. And that goes for media as well. I can recall, was it last year or was it in Syracuse? Peter Budaj was one of the goaltenders because he was down with the Ontario rain. And so we made a beeline for the Western Conference dressing room immediately the first day to go do a really great interview with Peter Budaj. So it's an opportunity as well.
His face go lit ahead. Up. He was happy to see us, and it was great.
It was really great. You know, so you get opportunities like that where you get some access to half of a league's worth of players that we don't normally get to have access to throughout the year simply because these teams don't play one another throughout the regular season. So we'll see what we come up with, and it'll be a lot of fun. Be sure to tune in for that. Speaking of tuning in, make sure you tune into all of our other podcasts here on Rocket Sports Radio. Of course, we have Habs Unfiltered with Blaine and Traeg. We have a Listen with Lewis and Gibby, which little teaser here. I'm actually going to be doing a guest spot on Have a Listen next week, I believe. So be sure to tune in for that. And of course, Habs 360 is our live podcast that takes place every Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m., hosted by Chris G and Rick, co-hosting that as well. So that's your opportunity to really join the conversation about your Montreal Canadiens. You can call in with questions and commentary and things of that nature. They always have great guests on the show. A lot of times it's a lot of the mainstream media members in Montreal. So be sure to tune in on Saturdays at 2 p.m. for Habs 360. And of course, we are always here with From the Press Box every Tuesday. However, I will note, next week, we are going to do a special day for From the Press Box next week with the All-Star events happening. We won't be having a Tuesday edition of From the Press Box. We're going to push it to Wednesday for next week. So just a special kind of lineup announcement there for you that we'll be back on Wednesday next week just due to the scheduling with the AHL All-Star Classic. And Rick, it should be a lot of fun.
Really looking forward to it. And yeah, thanks very much again. I'm always happy to do the podcast and to connect with our readers and listeners.
Absolutely. We love to hear from you. Don't ever be afraid. Don't hesitate to reach out to us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Send us your questions, your comments, anything about the AHL, the Laval Rocket, Montreal Canadiens prospects, draft potential players, you name it. Feel free to ask us questions. We are always happy to lend our opinion and analysis. And have a great week. Enjoy the All-Star festivities. And we will see you right back here next Wednesday, one time only on a Wednesday, right here on From the Press Box at the AHL Report. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Amy Johnson. Have a great weekend.